Plugged into the pulse of tomorrow's care, Dr. April's voice is everywhere. From gadgets to game changers, don't miss the ride. It's MedTech Madness, science amplified. MedTech Madness with Dr. April.
Welcome to MedTech Madness, the podcast where we share the methods behind the madness of bringing breakthrough medical technologies to life. I'm Dr. April, and whether you're a startup founder, clinician, innovator, investor, or just a curious mind like myself, you're in the right place. This show is here to help you cut through the noise, navigate the regulatory maze, and accelerate your speed to patient. You'll learn what it really takes to move from idea to impact, from evidence generation to commercialization. Short disclaimer, this podcast is powered by AI, but the content is not created by it. What you'll hear comes straight from my lectures, research, fieldwork, and papers reimagined into this new format. I love teaching, and this is just another way to spread knowledge and spark smarter decisions in medtech. So buckle up. The journey from bench to bedside is wild. This is MedTech Madness, and I'm thrilled to be your guide. Hello, madness makers. And I use that term endearingly, believe me, as you are the ones shaping the future of medtech. So I'm a fan. And today we're going to talk about payers. So even if your technology hits the market, even if doctors are prescribing it or ready to prescribe it, and hospitals are eager to use it, there is still one very powerful stakeholder who can make or break your success, the payer. Because without coverage and reimbursement, access can stall, adoption suffers, and your product risks fading into oblivion, no matter how clinically valuable it is. So in today's session, we're going to pull back the curtain a little bit on the people and systems who say yes or no to coverage and reimbursement. We're going to unpack how payers think, what they value, and how they evaluate new technologies, not just from a clinical lens, but through a financial and population level one. Whether you're in early stage R&D or preparing for market launch, understanding payers is not optional, it's essential. So let's get to it. This is your deep dive intro to payers, and it might just change how you think about innovation.
Welcome to the deep dive. This is where we take some pretty dense source material and boil it down to the key insights, the nuggets of knowledge you really need. And today we are plunging headfirst into, well, a really critical topic if you're anywhere near innovative medical tech. We're talking about healthcare payers, reimbursement, all that complex stuff.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah, let's do it. And our guide today is an incredibly insightful lecture from Dr. April Zambelli-Wiener. She brings this really unique perspective. She's a researcher, a data scientist, sure, but also, you know, a disruptor, an entrepreneur. Her whole drive, her why, it's all about speeding things up. Speed to patient, she calls it. Getting research out of the lab and into the real world faster. She talks quite openly about her frustrations with academia, the silos, you know, how slow translation can be. She even says there's an industry of research at the expense of patients and progress. Pretty strong words. Her mission is really to change that. That personal drive, that why, is exactly why we picked her lecture. It adds, well, a real human element, doesn't it? So our mission here is simple. Pull out the most crucial knowledge from her insights. Give you a shortcut, really, to understanding this whole reimbursement maze. It's about bringing certainty to an inherently uncertain process, which, funnily enough, is TTI Health Research's brand promise, too. So let's get into the weeds. Okay. First off, let's just acknowledge getting a new medical device or technology successfully commercialized, it's an incredibly complicated endeavor, seriously complex. I mean, just getting through the FDA is tough. Everyone knows that. Huge hurdle, years, millions of dollars. But what often gets missed, or at least underestimated, are the barriers around actually getting paid for it, the reimbursement side.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. You could have the most brilliant, life-changing tech, but if nobody pays, it doesn't reach patients. It just sits there. And the U.S. healthcare system, oh boy, it's this sprawling mix of stakeholders, patients, doctors, hospitals, clinics, medical societies, and then the payers. And it's always changing. constantly evolving. Any diagram you see trying to map it out,
yeah,
honestly, it's probably too simple.
Too neat, yeah.
Way too neat. Broadly, you've got public payers, think Medicare, Medicaid.
Yeah.
Then private or commercial, that's your United Health, Aetna, Cigna, folks like that. And then there's the VA, the Veterans Administration, which is kind of its own unique single-payer system. Oh, and a quick nerdy note on spelling.
Yeah.
You often see P-A-Y-E-R, delay spelling. But formally, like in AMA documents, it's often P-A-Y-O-R. Just so you know.
Good distinction. Okay, so the money flow. Commercial insurance, you said, covers like over 60% of lives, so naturally companies focus there. But here's the twist, and this is where it gets really interesting, right? CMS, Medicare, and Medicaid services, they only cover maybe 20% of U.S. lives. Something like 11% original Medicare, 8% Medicare Advantage.
Oh, yeah.
Yet, they have this massive outsized influence. Their policies often become the blueprint for almost everyone else. How does that work? Why does CMS punch so far above its weight?
It's a fantastic question, and it catches a lot of people off guard. It's partly history, partly structure. CMS sets a kind of benchmark. Their sheer size and relative standardization mean other payers look to them. Unless your device is only for people over 65, which is rare.
Right.
You absolutely must factor commercial payers into your market access plan.
Mm-hmm.
But CMS policies, they're often the reference model for Medicaid, even for those big commercial plans. They're seen as establishing what's reasonable and necessary. That's a key phrase, legally grounded in the Social Security Act. We can circle back to that. Beyond just CMS, you've got other players stirring the pot too. Yeah. CMMI, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation. They're always testing new payment models, pushing towards value-based care. Then you have third-party benefit managers, professional medical societies, like for radiology or oncology, who issue guidelines that payers pay close attention to.
Mm.
Trade groups like ADVAM2. And what's really shifted lately is payers aren't just, you know, managing medical costs anymore. They're actively getting involved in care delivery, buying provider groups, enabling technology. They're becoming payviders in some cases.
Payviders. Okay, so it's a complex web. Payers aren't monolithic. You hear payer, but it's not one entity. Dr. Zambelli Weiner breaks them down into different types.
And understanding these types is crucial for your strategy.
Hmm.
She outlines five main organizational categories. First, national payers. Think CMS, the big commercial players like United, Anthem. They said broad rules usually demand rigorous evidence for value across large populations.
Okay, the big guys.
Then regional payers, covering maybe two or more states. This could be Medicare administrative contractors, the MACs who handle local Medicare stuff, or regional commercial plans like CareFirst. Third, local payers, single state or part of a state. They might be more focused on immediate local budget impact. South Country Health Alliance in Minnesota is an example.
More granular focus there.
Definitely. Fourth category is providers themselves acting like payers. IDNs, integrated delivery networks, ACOs, accountable care organizations, GPOs, group purchasing orgs, and those payviders we mentioned like Kaiser or Geisinger, who are both the insurer and the provider. Their definition of value is often tied to care coordination, population health.
Makes sense. They wear both hats.
And finally, number five, patients. Their role is growing, especially with high deductibles, direct-to-consumer tech. They're becoming more active decision makers about cost and value. The key takeaway, each of these types thinks about value differently. They have different processes, different evidence expectations. Some are really strict on budget impact. Others might be more open to innovation if the clinical case is strong.
That difference is huge. You mentioned Cologuard earlier as an example of navigating this.
Right. Sciences, the company behind Cologuard, used the FDA CMS parallel review. Smart move. Got both agencies looking at it simultaneously. Then Maxi, that big law shifting Medicare towards value-based payments that created a perfect opening for them to demonstrate Cologuard's value proposition.
Timing and policy alignment.
Exactly. And once Medicare was on board showing coverage and positive outcomes, commercial plans were much more likely to follow suit. And remember, behind the payer label, these are actual people. Doctors, nurses, statisticians, pharmacists, health economists. A real mix. And Dr. Zambelli Weiner stresses they do want to hear about new tech early, before launch. They need time to figure out the potential impact.
So getting inside their heads, how do they actually think? What's the core logic? You said it comes down to value for money spent.
Pretty much. That's the fundamental goal. So they ask questions like, does this new thing offset costs elsewhere? If we pay for this, can we avoid a more expensive surgery or hospital stay later?
Okay. Cost offsets. Makes sense.
They also look at, how common is the condition this treats in our specific group of patients? What does the current standard of care cost us for those patients? And crucially, what rules or restrictions do we need to put in place? Limit it to certain patients. Require trying something else first. They need to manage utilization.
Right, manage the budget. So how do they make these decisions? Is there a formal process? You mentioned HTA.
Yeah, health technology assessment. It's supposed to be a systematic evaluation of clinical and cost effectiveness. But HTA in the U.S. is problematic. It's putting it mildly.
How so?
Well, it's not standardized at all. It can be really confusing. And here's the kicker. Different payers can look at the exact same clinical evidence package and come to completely different conclusions about coverage or value.
Wow. Okay, so the same data gets different reads.
Absolutely. It's a major headache for innovators. For CMS, remember that reasonable and necessary principle from the Social Security Act. That's their foundation. Operationally, for a treatment, it usually means it has to address something serious, high risk of morbidity or mortality.
Mm-hmm.
For diagnostics, there's an extra layer. Clinical utility.
Clinical utility, meaning?
Meaning the test result actually has to change what the doctor recommends and lead to a better patient outcome. Just providing information isn't enough for CMS coverage. It has to demonstrably help. CMS sets broad policies sometimes, called National Coverage Determinations, NCDs. But most coverage decisions are actually local, made by those NMACs, the Medicare Administrative Contractors.
The regional level again.
Right. There are also things like NTPA's new technology add-on payments. These are temporary extra payments for really innovative inpatient tech. But the bar is incredibly high. Very few things qualify. And for the commercial payers, negotiation power is huge. Big employers or big health plans have more leverage. And for smaller local plans, value can be like super localized. What saves money in one town might not in another.
Okay, so understanding that mindset, the focus on value, the different interpretations, the specific requirements like clinical utility, that's step one. Step two is, how do you actually engage with them? How do you build a strategy when the ground rules seem kind of fuzzy and differ everywhere?
You absolutely need a coherent strategy, and you need it early. Market access thinking shouldn't be an afterthought. It needs to be baked into R&D from the beginning. Otherwise, you might spend millions developing something payers just won't cover.
Because the challenges are getting tougher, right?
Yeah.
More scrutiny on price, different evidence demands, stricter coverage rules.
Exactly. Increasing scrutiny, variation in what evidence they want, evolving requirements, focusing more on comparative effectiveness, not just placebo trials. And yeah, more restrictions. They might say yes, but only for this tiny subgroup, or only after you fail the cheaper option.
Which brings us to the brutal truths. Dr. Zambelli-Weiner apparently gets very direct about this, relaying what payers really think.
She does, and it's blunt, but essential to hear. Fact one, I don't care about you. The payer is overworked, overwhelmed. Your company's survival, not their problem.
Ouch. Okay.
Fact two, I'm not your partner. Forget cozy collaboration. Bring them hard evidence you'll save them money or significantly improve outcomes for their members. It's about their bottom line and member health, not partnership for its own sake.
Okay, evidence is currency. Got it.
Fact three, incentives are non-existent. Payers aren't typically bonused for saving money per member per month or adopting new tech. Their incentives are structured differently, if at all.
So appealing to their personal gain doesn't work.
Not really. Fact four, we don't do evaluation. Or rather, they have very limited bandwidth to re-review things. Once a decision is made, rightly or wrongly, it's hard to get them to revisit it. First impressions count.
Make your case strong up front.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the final brutal fact, your baby might be ugly. You love your invention, of course, but you have to learn to see it through a payer's eyes. For them, value means risk mitigation and cost offsets primarily. Is your baby delivering that?
Wow. I don't care about you. I'm not your partner. That sounds incredibly adversarial. Is there any room for any kind of positive relationship, or is it just about proving financial worth?
It sounds purely transactional, I know.
Hence.
And sometimes it feels that way. But partnership might be the wrong word. Think strategic alignment.
Mm.
Yeah.
Right.
Dr. Zambelli-Weiner's advice is actually to engage early, like before FDA approval, before your instructions for use are finalized, go talk to them.
Really? That early?
Yes. Recognize every payer is unique. Have your target product profile ready. Have a solid plan for developing evidence. And crucially, make it easy for them.
Easy how?
Give them the evidence they need, packaged clearly. Structured literature reviews, claims data analysis showing the current patient journey and costs, a summary of clinical improvement over the standard of care, and get specific about patients, not just all patients with X, but patients with X who failed Y treatment, or patients with X and Z comorbidity. That granular detail helps them see the precise fit and value for their members.
Okay, so early, targeted engagement with the right evidence package. What about the meeting itself? How do you make that productive, knowing those brutal facts?
Be super strategic with time. Dr. Zambelli-Wiener suggests maybe 20 minutes presenting, 40 minutes discussion, and an hour meeting. Let them talk more. And ideally, have a physician advisor lead the meeting. MD-to-MD communication often resonates better.
Makes sense. Peer-to-peer.
And this is critical that physician needs coaching. They need to talk less about the product's features and ask more questions about the payer's perspective. Instead of just saying, here's our study design, ask, would data from a study design like this meet your requirements for coverage? See the difference.
Asking, not just telling, trying to understand their needs.
Exactly. Payers, especially the Medicare contractors, won't give you explicit advice. They can't. But Dr. Zambelli-Wiener says, if you listen really carefully to their responses, their questions, their hesitations, they will give you insights into what works, what evidence they find compelling. Active listening is key.
So they offer insights, not advice. Subtle, but important.
Very. And always remember their constraints. They're short on time, understaffed usually, they can't review everything. And another subtle point. If doctors aren't actually using your product much in the real world, payers are unlikely to write a positive coverage policy. They won't say that's why, but utilization matters.
Right. If nobody's using it, why bother covering it? Okay, this landscape isn't static. What big shifts are happening now, post-pandemic especially? What trends should we watch?
Good question. Several key trends are reshaping things. One is continued consolidation. Big payers getting bigger, more payviders like CVS Cetna or United Optum buying up provider groups, fewer decision makers, more demand for holistic value.
Consolidation continues. What else?
Definitely growth in value-based contracts, more risk sharing. Payers are saying, we'll pay more if it works really well, less if it doesn't. Outcomes matter more than ever. Telehealth obviously exploded during the pandemic, and while it's settling, its expansion is changing care delivery and reimbursement models. There's also a big push for interoperability, connected health, making sure data flows between providers, payers, patients for better, more efficient care. Payers want that efficiency. And finally, Medicare and Medicaid expansion. Population is aging. More people are becoming dual eligible for both programs. Public program spending is set to rise significantly.
Okay, lots of moving parts. So wrapping this up, the big picture seems to be navigating payers means understanding they're not one thing. They have different motivations, different pressures, evolving priorities. It's less about just having cool tech and more about anticipating what they need and giving them targeted, value-based evidence they find convincing.
That really is the heart of it. Know your customer. And the payer is a key customer, alongside the patient and provider. Proper preparation, as Dr. Zambelli-Wiener emphasizes, is crucial. Partnering with people who understand this world can genuinely de-risk your commercialization path and help get your innovation to patients faster.
So here's a final thought for you to chew on, building on all this. We heard that the same evidence can be assessed completely differently by different payers. There's no single agreed-upon definition of value across this fragmented U.S. system.
Yeah.
Given that, what does it truly take to define and demonstrate value in a way that resonates broadly? How can you, as future leaders and innovators, help maybe shape a more unified understanding of value, ultimately benefiting patient access? Something to think about. Until next time on The Deep Dive.
Well, that's it for today. Thanks so much for diving into the madness with me. If you're working on something groundbreaking in medtech, whether you're a founder, a funder, or a fellow fan of the space, I would love to hear from you. You can reach out directly or learn more about the work we're doing at TTI Health Research and Economics, where we help medtech innovators accelerate their path to market and prove their value to the people who matter most, patients, clinicians, and payers. Visit us at tti-research.com or connect with me on LinkedIn. And if you found this episode helpful, subscribe, leave a review, or share it with someone navigating their own medtech madness. Until next time, stay bold, stay evidence-based, and keep building what the world needs.